I'm here with one of my favorite Italian brothers, other than my actual Italian brother, who is behind the camera, Gregorio Anvanzini, who is rolling through Montreal. And it's funny, I was having a conversation with Garrett just earlier, and he was like, you know, it's so awesome that there's not that many of our tribe in Montreal, so every time somebody would roll through, they're always going to come and see you. And I'm always so grateful when my friends, on their way down to Envision, to the jungles of Costa Rica, stop in and say hi. So thanks so much for being here.
Of course, it's my pleasure. And when I saw that there was a layover from Vancouver to Montreal, I said, like, Mark is going to be there, so let's do one night there.
Beautiful, beautiful. So tell me, what's what have you been up to, man? I mean, you know, I saw that you met a woman. I saw that you've been traveling the world. Obviously, you and I haven't spoken in a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, for some context, you and I have met around some of the work that you've been doing in terms of breath work, and as you call it, the breath of one, which I'll let you, you know, dive into. We've hosted masterminds together where you were kind of the leader of so many of the different events that we had going on. Yeah, I mean, what have you been doing? What's been up in your world?
Yeah, so much is happening, Mark. I'm so happy that I'm here because for me, catching up is always one of my favorite things to do. Mm-hmm. And doing that even with the world, like with a friend and sharing it with the world, I think is such a beautiful gift. So thank you for asking me to be here.
Of course.
And so I will say the main thing, it's like a combination of these two, which is I found finally the woman of my dreams. Mm. I've been waiting for her for a long time because you remember what was up, right? In my field. Like it was, even when we were in Costa Rica, I spent 3 years without having sex. So I was very honoring my energy and feeling like I wanted to wait for the right girl. And she arrived, and she literally arrived like a gift from the sky. She arrived because, have you heard of Hoffman, the Hoffman process?
Like Wim Hof or
Hoffman? No, okay. it's not Wim Hof. It's not Hoffman LSD. It's the Hoffman process. So the Hoffman process is this week-long, super powerful self-development course.
Okay.
It's like, have you heard of Landmark?
Of course, yeah.
So Landmark, I will say that Landmark is kindergarten, Landmark Advance is elementary school, Hoffman is a doctorate. It's literally like it's a quantum gap. It's a week, super intensive. You leave your phone away and you go full on. And so powerful. Mm-hmm. So during that week, I realized, wow, so this fairy tale that I was creating in my mind, which was, for me, the perfect woman would have arrived, we would have looked at each other, would there be love for sight, and from that moment, never arguing for entire life and dying together in the same moment. Like I had this like fairy tale, grand vision of perfection. Yeah. And it came because my mom and Fabio, my stepfather, I saw them for 13 years with this perfect love. They were little like two teenagers that just met. Mm. They were always kissing each other. They were always so sweet. So I felt like I want that. Mm. But then Hoffman, I realized that's not the only way. There are so many other ways. And so in that moment, I thought maybe the girl of my dreams is someone that I actually have met already. Because until that moment, it was totally out of my field. For me, among the 5,000 friends I have on Facebook, many of them are guys who were out of the game. from all the girls that I've met, for me, it was like the girl of my dreams, I've never met her. She's something that is there, out there. But then, after Hoffman, I decided, you know what? I'm going to find her. I'm going to, rather than waiting for her to fall from the sky, because for me, needed to be that. Mm-hmm. Coming like a package from the sky.
That's what you were expecting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I wanted to wait for her. And then I found, I'm going to find her. And so I start to search. I start to date different girls. At Burning Man, actually, I would say a month, no, not even, like a few weeks after Hoffman, I found a girl that I thought that she was the one, because it was at Burning Man. She came, like she literally came on me and she told me, I'm the one. Like she literally told me I'm the one. She speaks fluent Italian, super beautiful. Like she took me in the temple. She kissed me in the temple. Never kissed any girl in the temple of Burning Man. Like it was like all of these things. 40 hours later we met, she told me, I think you should marry me. So I felt like, oh my God, literally, like this is everything I've ever dreamt of. But then a few days later, I start to see a lot of red flags. And I'm very good at, when I see red flags, I listen. You know, so rather than getting caught up in the, oh, no, she has to be the one because everything was perfect, I felt like, no, she was the one for the first few days, but no longer. So I just let it go. And then I kept searching. I would start dating girls. I didn't kiss any of them except the one of Burnima. And then finally, when I went to Barcelona, there was this feature on Facebook that they took out. Guys, please put it back because I'm pretty annoyed by this, which is my friends who live in Montreal.
Yes.
What happened to
what happened to this feature?
Guys, this is a problem for me. I mean,
I know. It's such a good feature.
It's very annoying. I have a trick. So you need to change the current city where you live. I live in Vancouver. And I see the list of people who live in Vancouver. But it's pretty annoying. I need to change city where I live every time. So I receive a message from a friend that says, "Oh, I didn't know you live in Vancouver." No, I don't. No, it's just
I'm
a
just
trick.
For friends.
Exactly. So I search my friends who live in Barcelona. And I saw this super long list of friends. But because I was going to do a project there, I thought I'm not going to reach out to any friends. But let's see who is there. And they start scrolling and they see this girl, Andrea Ochoa. And they say, "Who is this Andrea Ochoa?" I saw the profile picture and they start scrolling and say, "Oh my God, she's gorgeous. I don't remember this girl." And they start looking at our friendship, our messages. And from the message, I realized that I met her at Burnima in 2015. But since then, we never spoke. We exchanged messages at the beginning, me saying, "Who are you?" And she said, "We met at Burnima last week." Because she was the girlfriend of a friend. Okay. And for me, I was so much in integrity with that if you had a girlfriend, for me, like,
yeah,
I couldn't visualize off of the list.
Yeah.
So we message each other saying, "Coming to Barcelona, would you like to hang out?" And she said, "Look, I'm here. For a coincidence, I'm here," which I call godsidence. I'm here. And we had a video chat. Before the video chat, I was in the train and I said to my mom, we were together, I said, "Mom, I'm gonna have a call with the one that can be the mother of your grandkids."
Oh, wow.
And she looked at me, she said, "How do you know that?" And I said, "I don't know, but I don't know, something is speaking to me. She could be the one." And we had this call, Mark, that was next level. Like, we spoke for like 1.5 hour I was in the mountains, so the phone was keep dropping. We were keep calling and calling and calling. And like, she was working for corporate New York, L'Oreal, Calvin Klein, like really hustling in New York. And she was a DJ. So she was doing a very, very...
She had that double life like
you. She had this double life like me, you know? So I was really like, "Whoa, this is fantastic." But then when we spoke, she told me that she quit drinking, that she was almost vegan, that she was in this process of self-inquiry. And I was like, "Whoa, my God, you really can be the one." So we finished the call and I spoke with my cousins that were in the train too. I said, "Guys, I found her." And they start to show them the pictures of this super beautiful girl. And they said, "This can be the one." Finally, after so long, I went to Barcelona. And like, since the first lunch, I literally decided I'm going to put all of my cards down. So we spoke about all the hardest topic that usually talk about, because I really wanted to make sure that I would have not kind of waste my time, because I had to do a project there. So I thought, if I keep seeing her, it's really because she could be the one.
Yeah.
So I decided every meeting we really need to go full on. And so since the beginning, we spoke about sex, what we like about, like, all of these topics to really understand if that was the case. And every time we went out, it was clearer and clearer and clearer. And then one day I told her, "I think you should come to Bologna next weekend. We can do a lot of magic together. We can start a podcast together."
Nice.
And she came to Bologna. And when I saw her with all of my friends, I felt like, okay, this is it. So the morning after we kissed, then the week after she came back to Italy, to the mountains, and we made love. That was January 20 last year. And that was it. The day after, I told her, "I would like to move to your place in Barcelona." And she said, "Come." She told me after that her mind was saying, "What are you doing? No, this is too early. I mean, you guys just met and everything." But I said, "Let's test it out." I moved to Barcelona for the first time in the past nearly 6 years. I stopped for 2 months in the same place, because usually the average is like 5 days in the same location. So that was like 2 months in the same place.
Yeah, you're always moving, from what I know about.
Always hopping. That was the only 2 months that I settled down. I got an electric skateboard, so I would just go around.
I have
hundreds.
One of those too.
Oh my gosh, so much fun.
They're so much fun.
So much fun.
They're so dangerous too.
So
though.
Dangerous. It's a constant adrenaline rush.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I love it.
Yeah.
Deeply encourage and discourage at the same time to get an electric skateboard. I encourage and discourage at the same time.
Be prudent, but it's definitely fun.
It's fun. And Yeah, and then after it became clear that she was the one, so we are now living the life of our dreams together. And there are a few surprises mm-hmm. that I'm not going to disclose now, but there are some good stuff brewing. And yeah, now we are traveling together. She left her corporate job. She was working corporate in Barcelona at the time. And now we're teaching the Breath of One together. We are, wow. Yeah, it's fantastic. She was born for this, Mark. Like the first time I saw her teaching, I was like, you're better than me when I started. Like she was just the fire just coming out. Like she's this super gentle woman, mm-hmm. but she also has this fire. She's her blood is Colombian.
Okay.
Both her parents are Colombian and she was born in Miami. So she has this fire that during the Breath of One just comes out with so much beauty that together it's so much better now, the Breath of One. So it literally took a whole new level because we're both masculine and feminine. That really, like, and sometimes I'm more in my feminine and she's more in my masculine. So we're literally not the guy and the girl. It's masculine and feminine. That's like that.
Holding the different energies and then and switch. The
exactly. Yeah. We crossed each other. And the other thing that happened, which is you're going to be very happy to hear because I know you love music too. For me, music, it's very close to my heart. And for her too, being a DJ. I really wanted to create a soundtrack for the Breath of One since years. And every time I would not have it. Have you ever done it with me drumming?
Yes.
Okay, so the drumming was already a big upgrade because at least I had the rhythm.
Yes.
And then we said, okay, because we had a big event in Singapore, we said, let's really make the soundtrack happen for Singapore. So we had a deadline, so we focused. We flew to my friend Hendrix in Cologne and we locked ourselves in a studio for a week and we produced a soundtrack that is mind-blowing.
Amazing.
Like it's a mix where it starts with classical and then you go Children of Robert Miles, so slowly you go to the place, then it goes with epic music, then we have techno, but slowly. Slowly,
it's
weaved in, and you arrive at a certain point with, they don't, do you know Stephen Bodzin? It's like an electro, the one of Berghain music. Mm-hmm. It's like music that you really go to dance in a techno club. Mm-hmm. And you see these 65-year-old people breathing with techno music. It's so powerful. And that's so amazing. It is a quantum leap now. Like having both these upgrades, things have changed so much. And now we are really finally ready to scale it up. We really feel the call now to really bring this to the world because you have been one of the many kind people that have invited us to the events to lead it.
Yeah.
But now we really want to see it growing around the world, you know, not having to be me going to event, like start to training people so we can come to Montreal for 3 weeks. We do a training course and then people start to teach it, you know. That's the idea.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, I know that you just launched your website, so I know my brother will bring that up on the screen and just scroll through, you know, nice and slow. I mean, for those of you who are listening and they don't know what the Breath of One is, we obviously now you understand that there's breath work involved. But explain it, and I'll explain my experience of you've explained it.
Please explain first your experience. I think it's nicer.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, look, the Breath of One, from my perspective, is, I would say it's a breathwork exercise, but unlike Wim Hof or those kinds of things where you're doing like fire breath and doing things that are meant to only push you through a mental challenge individually, like going into cold water or standing out in the snow or whatever it is. It's a group experience, particularly with, you end up back to back with another person. So you have someone who is really with you in that breath. And then at some points it feels like you're melting with that person. You're like, you're literally becoming one human being. And then as a group, you're also becoming kind of one group. Yeah. And you feel the entire energy of the group almost opening up a portal or a field of everyone's collective energy and pains and tears and all the things that come up in breathwork for many people, but all kind of mixed into this one beautiful experience. Now, for me, the first time I did it, I took a psychedelic.
I remember.
And that was wild. So I saw like a beautiful portal open up, and it was in Costa Rica. It was a beautiful, beautiful time at this event that Lenan was putting on at the time. And then we've done it many, many times over at our masterminds. We did it the first mastermind at Puerta Vida, which is now Vida Center, I believe it's called, or Vida. Yeah. Anyway, it's something by Vida or owned by Selena or run by Selena. And then we ended up doing it at in Butimona as well, obviously.
And then we did it again in Canada. We did it.
We did it in Terra Prima. You're right. We did it in Canada too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there was a whole group. So I mean, look, I've seen you lead and facilitate it many times. The drum, without the drum, with music. I love your music choice as well. So I'm very excited to hear that you now have a soundtrack to it, because I can imagine that it's timed and that's part of it. That's beautiful. It's a beautiful experience. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
And I love how you said, because I think that this idea of the collective, it's really, really different from most other breathwork that I've experienced, because it really, like, first of all, as you said, having the partner back to back really create this mutual support, because the practice is so much more intense than most breathwork. Like, many breathwork are very gentle.
Yes.
Like, many breathwork are very feminine, where you do like... Like very, very gentle. Ours, as you know, is ha, 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 and you keep going and going and going. So it's very masculine, but it's very held. So it's a healed masculine. It's not, because there is now this
demonization. Part of the masculine energy of that, of that kind of breath work, yes.
Yeah, because guys, remember, there is this big demonization of masculine energy. The problem is not masculine energy. The problem is the abuse of masculine energy.
Yes, out of balance.
It's out of balance. Energy. It's the same thing with money, you know? The problem is not money. The problem is when you abuse money. Yeah. Same thing is with sex. Same thing is with everything.
Absolutely.
So I think masculine energy, when you use it properly, is beautiful. And in that case, we have a very safe container where masculine energy can really come out.
Yeah.
And so there is the screaming part, and there is the really letting go. And with the partner, there is this beautiful moment where one of the partners is so tired, but the other one is going, so you give the support. And then the other one is tired, and the other one gives support. So it's
leaning in and back. You're both kind of going numb a little bit. Your legs and your hands are going a little numb. And so you, but I think the partner work itself amplifies it immensely, because when I've done breath work with other things, and we had Wim Hof stay in Montreal us. Literally, you know, we did a training before this is before he blew up. He had started doing some research, but his research had not yet come out. And we were like, we believe in you. Let's do it.
Yeah, I remember.
And so middle of January or February or whatever it was, we were standing on Mount Royal, on the mountain here in Montreal, feet in the snow, and just doing the Wim Hof breathwork with like a group of like 25 of us. And we did a whole mini series on it, Valhalla and stuff. But long story short, and Jordan, you can bring up that footage if you want to, even. But the long story short of that is just the capacity for us to do breath work together versus separately means that you're not going to pull off the gas as much.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when you're doing breath work alone, you're like, okay, am I going too far? Or I need a break.
Yeah.
So you're more likely to retreat a little and then go back in when, you know, obviously the facilitator is like encouraging you. But I don't think you push as far.
Yeah.
As when you have someone who is like directly leaning, you know, back to back.
Is that an accountability partner?
It's breathwork with an accountability partner.
Yeah.
That's a great way of saying it.
Yeah, totally. And I also like what you said about the oneness, because really the name Breath of One came from the idea of melting in the universe, because I had that experience just one time. So it's not something that came often, but one time I literally disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
One time with the Breath of One, I went to just a space that it was just white light.
Yeah.
There was no sound, there was no space, there was no time, there was no humanity, no planet Earth. It was just stillness.
Mm.
So that is where it really came from. It's the idea of oneness with the universe, oneness with the group, because at a certain point you have this synchronized breath.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have moments in which everybody goes on their own, because it's very important to let just the breath breathe you.
Mm-hmm.
But then, especially now with the beat of the music that is very clear, there are moments in which just the group from like going all separate, then together. And one time we had nearly 200 people, you know, doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine, like in your case, we were maybe 40, 50. No,
when we did it at... we did it one time at Punta Mona. I think we were a lot more than that.
And Punta Mona was bigger. Like one of the biggest...
The biggest one was probably... one of the bigger ones that we did was... And you did it in Vision right behind at the stage there. That was massive.
That was very big.
Yeah, that was very
that's
big.
Like 160 people, you guys. Yeah, that was very big. And you guys were speaking. Samantha was speaking.
Yeah, exactly. Samantha was speaking and I was speaking. And then we just hear you guys going off in the background. And I gave you a shout out. This is so funny because we had our own stage and vision. We ran a mastermind there. This is the first year I'm not doing the mastermind after it growing every year. I mean, year one, we were 35. Year two, we were, then we did Montreal, we're another 35. Then we scaled to 115. And then this year, last year, sorry, in 2019, we were 165 people.
Whoa, last year.
Last year, we were 165 people guys. In our camp, yeah.
Congratulations. That was my first year that I didn't do Envision in 5 years. So
yeah,
I'm gonna go
and this
back.
Is my first year that I'm not doing Envision in a few years, too. So beautiful. It's, you know, I just chose that I had to refocus and shift into something else. I feel like I've done the work to build the whole camp structure. Like, we were the first ever camp at Envision. You were there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The 35-person camp. Yeah, nobody else had that.
Yeah.
And now everyone's doing it. Like, there's a yoga girl who has a big camp. There's a Momentum Collective. Everyone's got a camp now. And
super
so
good.
We built kind of a Burning Man culture, which I've never been.
Yeah.
But I built Burning Man culture to Envision and brought that infrastructure, which I think is super helpful for them, right?
It's so good. It was also because it was the dream of Stephen Brooks.
Like, absolutely.
It was like literally his dream to really bring that to Envision.
Exactly.
And I'm so happy we're doing this.
We're doing it. We're doing it. So yeah, no, I mean, I'm so glad. I mean, there's so much tribe there, and you know, it's such a beautiful place. And Costa Rica, in particularly in winter, you know, is such a beautiful place to go to.
Mm-hmm. And we love Envision, guys. After Burning Man is my favorite event. Big endorsement to Envision.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. I've never been to Burning Man. I would imagine Burning Man takes the cake in terms of intensity.
Definitely.
And
definitely.
In terms of just like the magic that is there, just because of how wild it is in that way.
Yeah.
But I love Envision because I actually like something a little smaller in terms of generally in terms of events. I like tighter knit. I like a tighter knit community where I get to really know a lot of people. Not to say that, of course, at Burning Man you can get to know a lot of people, and you can go to Camp Mystic, which I know you're a part of, and you know, so there's all kinds of tribe there without a doubt.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's just something beautiful about Envision.
Yeah, Envision, it's also easy because you're in the jungle, on the ocean, you know, it's
yes.
It's also easy. Burning Man, you're in the middle of the desert, you know, it's
it's
a very different environment.
More difficult. It's more like being on Mars, I guess.
Yeah, I feel like that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, beyond the Breath of One, what else have you been up to? I mean, I know you went lugeing, or you went skeletoning.
Skeleton.
you did
this
a skeleton
guy.
Down in
I was this guy. My God, that was so much fun, Mark.
Yeah.
I spoke with so many people in Whistler about that.
Yeah.
Because he was just asking around before doing that. They say, guys, have you done it? And everybody said, are you crazy? No.
Yeah.
No, people don't do that. You know,
yeah,
we were three
scary.
People doing that. You know, it's super rare because, yeah, from the outside, it looks, I don't know, frightening, I think.
Yeah.
Like when I got super excited as soon as they told me, I got, and this was like one of the many times that the universe just gave me this gift. So I was with a friend in Whistler, mm-hmm. we are in a cafe, we see at the screen the bobsled, the one that they are like four together, and they look at her and say, oh my God, that's one of my biggest dreams since when I was a child.
because of that movie. It's all because of that.
Which movie?
You don't know what movie I'm talking
about?
What's it called? What's that movie called? The Jamaican bobsled team?
Mm. Never seen it.
It's a Jamaican bobsled
team.
Yeah, it's called, I can't remember the name of the
movie. No, I haven't seen the movie.
The movie's about a group of African Americans out of Jamaica, and they want to go to the Winter Olympics, and everyone's like, Winter Olympics, what are you talking about? And then they train to become a bobsled team.
Well, how do they train in Jamaica?
That's the whole point. That's the whole thing. It's like, they have no capacity to do it. So they end up making it, and they actually end up qualifying for the...
Is this a true story?
It's a true story.
No,
yeah,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, and then they refilm, they you know, do whatever.
Of course, wow.
But what ends up happening, and spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the movie, you know, whatever, but what happens is on their run, their bobsled tips over.
No, don't spoil me the movie. I want
anyway,
to hear. No, don't tell me that. Yeah. don't tell me anything else.
Well, so the point is...
Cool Runnings,
that's it. Cool Runnings. We'll watch it. Put it this
I'm
way.
Gonna
watch
that
movie.
No, I never see the movie, but I will see. I had these two things. Since when I'm a child, I love extremes, and it stayed away. So I would see this bobslide, especially more than the four one. It was the one just laying down like that. And the other thing that I'm going to do this one day, guys, I promise you, hold me accountable for this, it's the Olympic jump where they just fly.
The high jump, the crazy.
Yeah, the messy one. The one that
they
Oh
my God.
I want to do that so badly.
So
I would see the Olympic jump since when I was a child in the ski resort, and I would look at that and say, I want to do that. And they would look at the TV, this crazy guy is flying. And one day it's going to happen. I know of a Norwegian, I think, journalist that trained, I think, for just a year, and then he did it. Like, I think you need to train properly. Like you go slowly, but I really, so one day you're gonna see me flying on that.
I will pay to see that day. You tell me when you're doing your big jump.
It's gonna happen. I hope before having kids, so I don't feel even guilty for any kind
Did
of risk.
You grew up skiing the Alps?
Yeah, I started skiing when I was 5. So,
but you're in northern. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Bologna, which is like Bologna. 3 hours from the Alps.
I would go every year
to the Alps. And
that's my dream. One of my dreams is to go to
the Never been to the Alps? The Alps are fantastic. It's like Whistler level.
Yeah.
But not $200 a day for a ski pass, which was like, when I arrived there, I say $198. I said, no. That's like the 3 days.
Yeah.
And they look and they look and they say, no, it's actually one day.
It's a super popular mountain. Whistler is incredibly popular. It's beautiful. I've been to Whistler. I've skied Whistler or snowboarded Whistler. But but I would love to do the Alps. I'd love to go heli skiing. That was my thing.
Heli-ski is something that I haven't done. We can do that together. We can organize.
Let's do that. I would love to go skiing with you for sure.
Yeah, snowboarding. Though.
I'm a snowboarder too. Boom. Yeah. Yes.
Deal. Yeah. So I was there watching the bobsled, and they said, I would love to do that one day. And she said, you know, they do it here. And they said, yeah, I mean, but you need to be an athlete to do that. And she said, no, they do it for public. And they look at her and say, oh my God, I'm definitely doing that. We get a go ride, like the share ride. Mm-hmm. We get in the car, and my friend says, you work for the bobsled? And she said, yeah. There's a, you work for the bobsled? And she said, yeah. I said, okay. What's the deal?
Yeah.
And she said, yeah, we have bobsled. And have you heard of Skeleton? I said, no. She said, look it up. And they look Skeleton and they see this picture. Maybe we can show the picture of what that is there. It's like,
yeah, let's pull up a picture of Skeleton.
As soon as I saw the picture, I said, I'm doing it.
Wow.
And I asked, how fast do you go? She said, you can reach 100 kilometers per hour. And I said, oh my God, that's so exciting. I just got this adrenaline. And I felt like, okay, I'm doing both bobsled and skeleton. But then the time didn't allow me to do both. Of course, the driver gave me her 50% off for friends and family because we became friends in 10 minutes.
So
thank you, Emily, for that. I really appreciate that. That's super kind. And then, yeah, the day after, I went to do this amazing skeleton. Like, you just lay down, and they push you, and you go so far. I reached 98.6.
Wow.
So, yeah, you go.
That is scary. I've been thinking a lot over the last year about, like, what are things that scare me, right? And there's not that much. Like, really, honestly, not that much. Sailing across the open ocean is one of them that scares me. I've thought about that.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to do it.
100% happening. But I can't imagine. I gotta admit that I would be probably pretty scared about doing a skeleton. I think I would do it, but that's intense.
Yes, and it's less intense of what it sounds like. Like when you see the picture, when I tell you 100 kilometers per hour, you do these crazy turns and everything. Uh-huh. It sounds crazy, but when you do it, actually, you have a couple of moments in which you can feel two slash three times the gravity force.
Yeah, 3G.
You can do 2 to 3G. Mm-hmm. When you do from the top, 4 to 5G.
Yeah, yeah. So that's
a different game.
Yeah.
And you feel it in that moment in your spine. You really feel it, but it's not like bungee jumping. It's not at that level. Mm-hmm. Especially because you are not jumping. Mm-hmm. You know, you go start slowly. They let you go and you start slowly. The only thing is that battery holds. Because if you don't hold, you are gone. I think you really can destroy yourself if you don't hold.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing. It's just you need to ride. They say to be a potato sack, to just stay there and to not move. That's what they suggested.
That's what you're doing all these years of breath of water.
Yeah, exactly. Surrender.
Just
it's
surrender.
don't move. Stay there. The face. That's the other trick. They said. Don't put it too low because otherwise you're going to hit the...
Yeah, yeah.
There is a big helmet, so otherwise you just go like that. But if you do too high, there is the area that passes behind. So the idea is that you stay like 2 inches from the ground. So you're like
that.
You see all this?
And your head's just like...
Yeah, you're like that. You keep your eyes high. Wow. It's super cool, guys.
Is there like a break that you... Like, do you grab anything? No.
Yeah, you're grabbing.
You're grabbing onto the side.
Yeah,
right?
You're grabbing
onto
the side.
There's no slow.
No.
Yeah, no, just, no. It just it, keep no. going.
Yeah, you keep going. You'd be a potato sack.
Don't have to lean at all.
No. Okay. You need to let it go. You need to. It's full surrender. That's why for me it was pretty easy, because it's surrendering. Wow. You don't have to learn a skill of moving in one or the other side. Yeah. No, you let it go. Yeah, it was fun.
That's a great sport.
Can you do it here?
We don't have big enough mountains to warrant that, I don't think, around here. Maybe in Vermont or something like that, they might have something.
If you find something, go, because it's fun. Yeah.
No, that sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. I would definitely go to the Whistler one, too. I have a friend. I went to Whistler in August 2019.
Do you go to the spa, Scandinavian spa?
I did not. No, I had my friend. So my friend, Peter, runs a project called the Zenith Project, and it's on Anderson Lake. It's north of Whistler. An hour and a half, maybe north of Whistler, big private property, beautiful, like glacial water kind of lake. But I went kayaking on it. I went swimming in it, of course. And I stayed on his property there. So I did not, I, that was my spa basically. Mm. It was a full retreat. I went for my birthday. And then right after, I went to an event called Triplet, and I was there with a bunch of YouTube influencers, learning a little bit about their world and that kind of stuff. So that event was the first event I had ever paid for to go.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I was like purely an attendee. Beautiful. No, I wasn't a sponsor. I wasn't running anything, and I felt really good. I love BC.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's so beautiful.
It's fantastic. I went last time 10 years ago to Vancouver. It was like, I was struck by the beauty of the city, by how open it is. And then we went to Vancouver Island, to the Rockies, yes. Peyto Lake. Yeah. I saw Northern Light in September.
Yeah.
That was one of the most beautiful manifestations. I spent the entire day hiking. I think it was Lake Louise. And they spent the entire day speaking with people about where can I see the Northern Light, how it works, because I knew I would just arrive to Canada, so I knew Canada was a place for Northern Light, and they had this big dream of seeing it. And they start to speak, okay, when you think I should go, December is the best time, okay, go to the Northern and Yellowknife, like they were telling me all the details.
Yeah.
And in the night, I was still smoking a lot of weed at the time, and I'm rolling a joint, and my Shlomit, my ex-girlfriend, said, amore, amore, she take my arm? She does like that, the joint flies away, and says, amore. And then I said, no, I was not like that. And she said, look. I look up, and I see this Northern Light. It's like the sky is, it's dark, and there is these green things that are literally like a painter. Mm. It goes low, and it makes this. And I'm there, I'm literally mesmerized for a few seconds. I'm totally speechless. And then I look at her and say, we need to call everyone. So we were in a hostel. We start screaming, say, guys, wake up, wake up, you need to see it. Nobody woke up. I have no idea what happened.
Yeah.
But we stay there, and then we take the car and we start chasing it and we start going around. And then the day after, they told us, guys, you have no idea how lucky you are, because it's September.
Yeah.
So in September, usually you don't see that. Mm-hmm. And it was a level 7. It was like, I think they told me level 7. I have this memory. Like it was intense. It was not like a couple of things. It was like color, but a lot of waves moving.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally one of the moments that I felt like, universe, thank you so much. Like, I realized that when you speak to the universe, same thing that happened with Skeleton, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When you really put it out, very often the universe give you back. But in this case, don't fall into the trap that they speak about in The Secret of you can manifest anything you want. Because what they don't agree about is, if it's not aligned with the rest of the universe, you can want something, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, it can always be this egoic, I need, take, kind of energy.
Yeah.
I think that when you're trying to align yourself with a greater cause, the universe conspires to make it happen.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I just, you know, if I really think about how I made the mastermind happen, or how I'm making Valhalla happen, our farm here on the South Shore and all that stuff, none of that, I can't explain how it always happens fully.
Yeah.
I can explain, like, yeah, I did this and I invited this person. I can trace it all back to something, but there's a magic that just comes with something like that you cannot replicate. And I think that everyone thinks that it's so easy to do. You know, like, I know that there's a camp that took our spot this year, and it's some of our friends, and, you know, it's got lots of great people going, but it doesn't have the same amount of enthusiasm and the same amount of magic as what we were able to do. And I don't know. I'm not there. I'm not going, but, So I'm not gonna judge it or whatever. But sometimes the magic is there, and sometimes it's not. You know what I mean? It's not. And even in my own events, like there's the last event, the last mastermind we did, the magic wasn't as there.
You know, was it there?
At the Punta Mona? No, the last year.
That's why.
Yeah. No, 100%.
That's why.
I can't do a mastermind without you.
Yeah, that's why. You even told you.
No, I told you the year one. I told you, you have to come. You have to come and do, you know, the Breath of One. And you were calling it at the time the Merkaba. And then you had just switched it over.
Yeah.
But the, anyway, so the.
What did you say when they ask you, Mark, how do I run a good event?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think you need a good balance between. Put it this way. I think a really good event moves you through a journey that stimulates your mind, makes you, feel your heart, and inspires your soul. You know, and mm-hmm. I think the work that you do sinks people out of their mind, into their body, into their heart, but then through just keep pushing and pushing and pushing and surrendering through the breath, I think that they connect to the soul. And I don't think it's just that one thing, it's the whole combination and the flow of that and a mix of that. It's almost like a balanced meal, right? It's like if you only eat potatoes, yeah, potatoes are great, but they're not as exciting as if you have broccoli next to it and you add salt and all the things that go with it. So if you have an experience that is catered in that way with a group of people that is curated very powerfully, then I think it gets really magical. And I also believe that there's a magic in a smaller group. You know, I've never been to an A-Fest or a Summit or anything like that, but I definitely know that even in my own mastermind, when it got bigger, it felt less magical than when it was tight-knit and I really got to interface with everyone.
It's hard. I think it's harder to manage it with the same level, but you can. It's just more challenging because I agree with you. I think the curation is so important, and the really bringing some events are much more free flow, and the transformation that happens from my experience, Burning Man is a different game. Like I'm speaking about curated retreats is a different game. When they are very highly curated with intention of really bringing transformation and bringing connection, that is where the magic happens. And I love what you said about like a buffet, like having many different, like a balanced plate, because even the Breath of One, like the center of the Breath of One is the breath.
Yeah.
And there is so much more. Like, you know, there is like the part of finding the partner with your eyes closed.
Oh, absolutely.
And
it's and an experience. There is the connection.
We added a beautiful layer now, which is we paint each other's face.
Oh, before. With tribal markers?
Yeah. So once you find the partner,
you
paint your partner and the partner paints you. So you really bring this playfulness, this moment of joy, people with clay, like it depends with which material we use. And it's so much fun. People laugh so much and then everybody's tribalized.
I really like, this is a shout out directly to Amir and what he's doing with tribal markers. I really think that is such a beautiful, I like really understood kind of indigenous culture and why they do this whole ritual of painting and adding all these things. I just really understood the power of something like that. Like it's that
powerful.
Feeling.
It's powerful.
Like particularly Amir and the way he does it, you know, other people are great at drawing too, but the way that he kind of has like a little sacred ceremony with you just doing that and then channeling kind of that, your energy into a design that you add almost like a temporary tattoo for a night. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful addition.
It's in our genes. Like one of the things that I've noticed with this practice and with everything else that comes with the Breath of One, because as you know, after the breathing, we sing together, Savior Rod, Spirit Burst, like it's really like bringing back to a lot of pieces that are in our genes because we have been doing this for millions of years.
Yeah.
Like Homo as a species, not Homo sapiens, Homo has been here for 2 million years.
Yeah.
Homo sapiens, 100,000+ years. Mm-hmm. So we have in our genes this tribal way of being, which is being around the fire, as we were doing here in Canada and in Punta Mona, telling stories around the fire, singing together, being in connection. Like there is this story of the little girl that goes to the chief, I think it was from Native Americans, and she said, I'm sad. And he said, when did you stop singing? When did you stop dancing? When did you stop telling stories around the fire? You know, for me, this is really, it's so simple and it's so essential. If you are in a community, you are automatically, maybe it doesn't happen the first or the second or the third day, but automatically when things are curated in a way that you're really welcome and encouraged to actually do these activities, normally you're gonna, after a few days, start singing and dancing and telling stories. Because even if you have some blocks towards all of them, because these are three taboo things, speaking in public, most people freaks out. Singing in public, more than that.
Yeah.
And even dancing, unless people are drunk, it's more challenging. So I think that going back to these roots, which is something that I've been doing again for millions of years, it's so essential and it's a part of us. And to an even bigger level, like in a bigger, bigger umbrella, as you know, like we have the same idea of co-living, it's so crucial for the future because it's our essence. Like humans are meant to live in communities. We are like wolves. We are meant to live together. Now we're living everybody in different apartments where you don't know your neighbors, where nobody's connected anymore. No, nobody. Majority of West people in Western world are not connecting with people around, not even with their family, with themselves. So I think that is, for me, one of the keys to really spend more and more time in communities. And that's why these events that we are creating are so powerful.
Yeah.
Even more of the, like, the content in itself, I think it's beautiful, like often is beautiful, but what is even more important is curating the staying together.
Well, I couldn't agree more. It's why I have spent what is now going into our eighth season at Valhalla to build physical community that is permanent. I think my biggest sadness around the culture of, let's say, festival culture is specifically, is that it's kind of this temporary thing that we pop up, but then we kind of, we don't think about the longer term implications of leaving a better infrastructure so that it grows into more and more and more.
Yeah, I agree with
you. And I wish that Burning Man had more of that, honestly.
I agree.
Because if they built a temple every year and then you come back and you build it again and you build it again and you build it out of permanent materials rather than impermanent ones, let's say, then there's a beauty to that. But the there's a challenge to it too, and I understand that it would ruin elements of Burning Man. I get it.
No, you touched the only one. Like, I think the temple and the man are the two ones that I will keep burning every year because it's but the rest, I think the rest should be upgraded every year. Like, exactly. Rather than,
is there a way that we can do this more and more and more? Even if it means that it's movable, meaning like even if everyone's coming in on tiny houses or something, and or and then instead of having porta potties, you have, you know, composting toilets. But then you just bring them back. You move them out and you bring them back. So then you have an ecosystem that is being built out of that. And of course, people have those initiatives and they bring that to the table. But I wish that it was systemically a way that we can bring that to physical communities and we had more commitment with one another. And
no, it's the permanence. Like, for me, what is important, what you're saying is, like, Envision is doing it now, is you bring the people there to create all of this infrastructure. And the majority of that, in my opinion, should stay and be upgraded.
Yes.
And be upgraded. It's challenging to speak about that with Burning Man because Burning Man is in the desert. It's, by definition, an environment that is just not hospitable, you know.
I agree. But that's, like, so that's one element of it, and I agree. I'm not trying to say Burning Man has to change this way. First of all, I've never been. I don't think it's wise for me to say. But the idea of, even envision the way that I would see it is, you know, Even me as an investor in Envision, as building a community there, it's like, hey, we bought the tents, but I want to reuse those tents. Not that we never did it, but I want to be able to, like, invest in that so that rather than I always have to rent it from you and then the event doesn't really make that much money because events don't, unless you can establish some real sponsorships or own the place where you're hosting the event or have a really, really good deal. So they don't make that much money. They're really difficult to do. So then you burn out.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened to me. It's not that I burnt out so much as there was, I realized it wasn't the direction I wanted to go in, and I really wanted to build a physical community, a permanent community here in Montreal. This is why I'm staying. Because it takes so much time to do that.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to put that much energy and that much time and all this, spend what, $250,000, $300,000+ in a week to host an event or an 8-day event, man, if I could put $300,000 into a house that is going to host people permanently and run mentorships and run masterminds and run events out of, run a permanent farm, permaculture, all those things, then that has such a deeper, longer lasting impact. And that's where
it's lower, but longer.
Yeah. And this is why I wanted to always host at these eco villages like Punta Mona, because that leaves an impact.
Yeah.
Right? Like us bringing the event to Punta Mona, you know, we upgraded us from tents to half the people were in bungalows this year. So those aren't permanent. Like they're not, you know, but they're permanent enough that many events were going to use it and probably for the next couple of years.
So they build the bungalows for
the build the bungalows so because good. They knew we were coming and so they would have the so resources good. To do that. Right. So we are contributing to the betterment of that village more and more and more. And every single time we do it, we contribute.
That I think is a very good way to do it because in that way you're doing both.
Yes.
You're bringing people for the week transformation because it's easier.
Exactly. Like, of course, not everyone. I don't expect everyone to move to the jungle of Costa Rica. That's not for everyone. Some people will and they'll go there even for a month or two. But that again, a month or two is more than a week.
Yeah.
And it has a much longer, better impact than just a week long retreat. I also understand that if somebody's living in New York and just wants to come for a retreat, great, let them do that. Let them earn the resources that New York affords them and then bring that to an eco-village.
Yeah.
Great, that's how eco-villages grow. But there's not enough people there's a problem of long-term thinking in some ways. And there's a problem of everyone wanting to make their own community. That's another problem.
Big problem.
And then the third is that there's just a challenge in the commitment that we are showing up as. And I think that now in our generation, it's even lower. We have less commitment to everything, right? We're less committed to getting married. We're less committing to partnerships. We're less committing to financial contribution, you know, we commit less to our retirement, we commit less to everything.
That's true.
And then I think our parents and you know, if I think about the old Italian kind of mentality that I know my nonna grew up with and all that stuff, the way that they thought was so much different than what we think today.
Yeah, we are much more fast in changing everything.
Yeah, it's so we buy a phone or we buy a couch, but we're like, oh, we'll keep it for 2 years and then I'll sell it or throw it away, right? Whereas my parents and even my grandparents, they put plastic on the, and people laugh at this, they'll put plastic on the thing, but they'll keep it forever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
it's true. They're making an investment in a quality item rather than fast fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And what fast fashion does is that it pollutes our rivers and our streams and our oceans. But it's so, because we don't feel that small effect on our own, and it's, you know, what's individually good for us is kind of creates the tragedy of the commons.
I agree. And thank you for bringing this part because I think it's one of the things that I'm really focusing a lot of my, not energy, but the way that I'm buying things.
Mm-hmm.
It's really based on that. Like I'm one of the biggest sponsors of Patagonia you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I need to buy something, I first check if Patagonia has it.
Yeah.
And if Patagonia has it, I buy it because Patagonia is fair trade. It uses recycled materials. It's certified for all of these parts. So it's one of the few big companies that really made it.
Yeah.
And just to let you understand how true is that, I fall with the electric skateboard.
Yeah.
And I totally open a jacket, a $400 jacket that I bought 3 months before.
Mm-hmm.
And they went to Patagonia and they said, we can sew it, no problem, and give it back to you.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, it's going to take a couple of weeks. I said, okay, no, I'm gonna just keep it and leave it when I arrive back to the US. I went to Paris and I was there the day that Notre Dame was on fire.
Oh.
I had that thing and I was there watching Notre Dame on fire. And of course I went the closer I could, it was just closer and closer and closer. And all the pieces of ash kept falling and they would keep my hood on. And then I saw that the jacket was
burnt
everywhere. Like there were holes everywhere. So I brought it back to Patagonia. I said, guys, it's a little worse now, the situation. And I said, oh, of course, no, this is too bad. I'm going to give you a new one. So they literally gave me without even ticket, they gave me just a new, and this is for life.
Mm-hmm.
Like Patagonia is this policy of putting the planet, putting people over profit.
Yeah.
And for me, this is really the big change that we can make because every time
make profit. Like the only reason you choose Patagonia versus the next brand is because of that mentality. Yeah,
exactly.
And so, you know, I like to call it philanthropy, right? How can you be philanthropic and also have the ROI of return on investment? The other ROI of ripple of impact doesn't need to be ignored.
Yeah, no, it's super important, super important. And for me, when we buy, because every time that we are spending a dollar
mm-hmm.
or a euro, we are we are voting for a market. Like if we're spending $1,000 in a Gucci bag, we are saying, Gucci, I like that. Give me more Gucci. Yeah. So have more slavery and factories, because that's what sadly happens. Even though they make so much money, they pay their employees so little, be the one that they makes the bags and everything. Or if on the other hand, we say, okay, I'm going to spend $100 for this Patagonia, I'm saying Patagonia, give me more. So I think it's so important. It's the same thing with organic markets and with everything. Like we are asking for more of something. So it's, we're literally voting with every single dollar. So it's so important to focus on that.
Yeah.
And my Andrea now is so focused too. Like she loves this concept, but at the same time, she feels like Patagonia is too sporty for me. So she's researching every time about sustainable brands that do things in a beautiful way. And there are so many. So it's just a matter of...
It's growing.
You need some, yeah, you can find it. At least online, you can find it.
Yeah.
Like if you search for something, any product you search for, you're going to find one that has your thing. And going back, I want to just close a loop, which was the part of the secret of the idea of manifesting. You were saying if it comes from the heart, it's going to be manifested. If it comes from the ego, no. I think it can also come from the ego sometimes, and you can manifest it if you need to learn the lesson. Like, let's say if you need to be smashed by the universe for you becoming rich quickly, you can make it. You can say, I want to be rich. You might become rich, but then the universe is going to shake you up by destroying a lot
There'll
of the things.
Yeah.
There will be cost. So I think if it comes from the heart, I think the direction is going to be really guided and become effortless. If it comes from the mind, it's going to come at cost and it's going to be challenging. And some people are going to really want to achieve something and they will still not, because if it's not aligned with the rest of the universe, it's not going to happen. So for me, that is the beauty of it's a balance. It's not that we can manifest anything we want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I'm always impressed by those who choose to manifest for others.
To manifest for others. Yeah.
To use that exact power to bring that and say, I can manifest anything, and here I am going to manifest this for you.
Which is what we are doing. I mean, Mark, I think that we are in this beautiful flow where we chose to really be at service by doing what we really love.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that there are many like us, because we are doing what we really love, and we bring excitement to that because we are doing what we love, and people around are inspired, and by doing that, it creates this ripple effect where people are more and more impacted by, oh my God, I can live the life of my dreams too. I don't have to be in this 9-to-5 in a rat race. Mm-hmm. And so many people told me that thanks to an experience, thanks to something that they heard, they felt like, you know what, I'm going to just let it go and I'm going to start to live the life of my dreams, which doesn't mean that it cannot be in an office.
Totally.
If you love to be in an office, because
great.
You like
some
to
like
be
it.
Told what to do, because you want to stop at 5 and to not have any thoughts about it. Some people are made for that. Some people prefer that. So
of course.
Do that. But if you are not feeling good about that, for me, this is the big thing behind life in general.
Yeah.
There is not one specific thing that is good or bad. It's just, are you enjoying it?
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy it, do more of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't enjoy it, find a new game. Find what really lights you up. If you love being in Montreal, if you get tired, change city.
Exactly.
Same thing with jobs, same thing with friends, same things with partners.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's very important. As soon as things don't go well, try to see if you can fix them. If they're not fixable, just change.
And some resilience in there is helpful too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing that just because you hit a roadblock doesn't mean you should just switch paths immediately. And it's discerning those
things.
I
think we should first try to change, like to see if they are fixable.
Exactly.
But not get stubborn about that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And not hold on just because there's, oh, the money's good or this, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's when, if you're leaning up against your fear and fear is stopping you from making a move in a particular direction, then that's where you have to find a way to seek that discomfort.
I agree.
Yeah.
And for me, the other point here is to not compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, with Andrea is a perfect example of that. Like I wanted a girl that was curious, open to spirituality, adventurous, funny, and smart, beautiful. For me, those were non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to have all of them. She's all of them and so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, this is the important part. It's because I decided to not compromise. I spent a few years by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I found so many girls during those few years that were ticking a lot of those boxes, but not all. So I decided, you know, I'm not going to compromise because I know I want all of it. So why should I settle to less? So I said, she might come when I'm 60. And I'm okay in being by myself until I'm 60. So I think that this was the important part. I was okay in staying by myself. I did not crave to have a partner. So for me, in everything is the same. With a partner, more than anything else, because I think the life partner is the most important piece. Mm-hmm. But right after that is friends and the city where you live and the job that you do, like all of these things. If all the boxes don't work, really find a way to transform what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And for me, this is crucial. It's we live in an era where we can do it. Thanks to our parents.
We have access. If you're watching this right now, you clearly have access.
Yeah.
You have access to the internet.
With the internet, you were watching a documentary a day, right?
Not a day, but a week.
A week. So like you can, with the internet, you can get all the information you want about starting anything you want in life. Mm-hmm. So of course, for some people, it's easier because they have more resources for starting point. For some people, it's easier because they have maybe more skills in a specific direction. Yes, for some people, it's easier than others. The others one are going to have to play even more challenging and more fascinating. I have a friend who is now a doctor in Michigan who came from the countryside of Cameroon. Mm. He was living in the countryside of Cameroon. An amazing guy, Callistus. I love you, Callistus. He was just going from scholarship to scholarship. He got a scholarship to go to Oxford, and after Oxford, he got a scholarship to go to Michigan, and he became a doctor. You know, it's an example of, not everybody makes it because he started from a much more challenging point. But at the same time, let's also remember that people like him, they had more challenges from a money perspective, but he had community. So when we think about poor people in Africa, in South America, like I've been to almost 70 countries now, the happiest people in the world are the ones that are living in community.
Oh, 100%.
So,
one of the number one determinants of longevity of life is partnership, community, things like that.
Yeah.
Speak so much more to the longevity of someone's life than having more money or being richer.
There is also the study, you know, the 75-year study from Harvard.
Which one?
Oh, you know, if there is that TED Talk, like where they research about what is the common denominator about happiness.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember what you're talking about.
Like they did this big test where they say, what is the reason why people are happy? Mm-hmm. The result was, once that you are above the
75K or whatever it is, 80K.
The minimum line of having food, of paying your bills, like once that you are above that line, the
increase.
Only thing that matters is if you have quality relationship with people around you.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the only reason why you're happy or not.
Yeah.
And it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
I know a lot of billionaires that, like, I'm friends with a few billionaires that are still not happy.
Yeah.
Because we live in a society that does encourage this connection, does encourage community, and that's why we're doing this.
Well, and it also becomes a curse in some ways, because the problem is that as you gain $1 billion, I would imagine that your interface and your reaction is that everyone wants something from you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so then you become defensive in everything.
Yeah.
And you don't know if somebody's really your friend or not. Even if they're totally being your friend, you might have that one doubt, that thing that holds you back.
Yeah.
And then essentially that ruins your ability to fully immerse and surrender essentially into that happiness with that person, with that partner, with whatever it is. So I can imagine, I can imagine it's a really stressful life actually to be a billionaire.
100%, because I believe that the point with money, like you touch fully, I think one of the most important ones, the point with money is that it is so powerful that it gives you the keys of so many doors that if you open the wrong door, you can really fall into darkness. One door is the one that you just mentioned, which is closing yourself because you never know if people are with you for money or what. And they say the same thing comes with influencers. Whenever you have a resource that other people want, you risk to fall into the trap of first having people that actually really do that for that reason.
Yeah.
So you need to really start to discern. Even worse, your partner. How do you really know that your partner is with you because she or he really loves you, or because you have a lot of money, or because you have a lot of power?
So
which is a pretty common thing. Or you can open the doors of infinite addictions. Like when I was younger and I was doing drugs, I really had to, like, I didn't have a lot of money.
Yeah.
My mom was controlling me. When you have infinite amount of money, if you enter into the trap of cocaine, very hard to come out from that. Yeah. And then you have the keys of buying more. So that is the problem with money. It's too many keys in the hands of some people that have no idea which door they should open.
Yeah, and it becomes very difficult to have self-control within that that space.
Yeah. I've refused money for a few years. Like, I was literally like in that flow when you were invited.
Yeah.
I was with no money at all in my pocket.
Yeah.
And I just let the universe carry me. And by distancing myself from money for a few years, I start to understand money. Yeah. And now I'm in a place that...
built a better relationship.
Yeah, now I have a very healthy relationship with money because now I know that money is just an energy. And if you use it properly, I want to be a billionaire because I want to build schools, I want to build hospitals, I want to build communities, I want to build programs for people.
Because to become a billionaire, in a sense, you're solving a billion-person problem.
Exactly. Thank you, Jason Silva, for that. Like, it's one of my favorite quotes.
I mean, it's really, I think it's him, and I know at least it was quoted in Peter Diamandis' Bold, but the idea of that really is a thing.
Yeah,
it's the fastest way.
I agree.
You know what I mean? It's the fastest way to do it. It's not an easy task. And I don't think it's not an easy task. It's not an easy task because it requires you to have to take a lot of risk to get there. To do certain things and to build a business of that scale.
For sure.
And it's just, you know, it's wild. It's wild.
What I love also is the idea of not making them stagnating. Stagnating?
The stagnation. Not making the money stagnate, you mean?
Yeah. Like, I think the circulation is very, very important, right? Yeah. Rather than saying, oh, I need more. It's making sure that they keep flowing.
Yeah.
And you immediately invest in something that really helps you and your business and people around you keep growing.
Yeah.
Rather than feeling I need to accumulate, like the accumulation. I actually had this theory during my thesis. I never made further research about that. You guys can do that. I don't know, but I really felt for me that was a big answer. When I started researching about, when I was thinking about my thesis, my architecture thesis that was based on Burning Man, ended up being based on Burning Man, I started thinking, when did real problem with inequality started? Because for me, this massive inequality was like, how is that possible that a few people in the world own the majority of this planet? And they start thinking, at the time of the tribes, if you were the number one or if you were the last one of the tribe, what was the difference? Mm-hmm. The number one had maybe a bigger teepee, more time to speak in front of others, more respected, maybe better ornaments, but not much different.
Yeah.
The last one maybe was a little bit more having fun of, like more like that.
Yeah.
Now, like the number one in the world owns countries.
Unheard amount.
Countries. Yeah. And the last one is struggling every day for fighting for food. And there are actually a billion people that are starving today. So it's a pretty big number. So I start thinking, what was the change? And then I thought about maybe it was money. Money probably was at the beginning of that, of really accumulating. But then I thought, I think it was banknotes, because when you start to have banknotes, you can have written on a paper an amount of money that you couldn't hold it even in a house. Because when it was gold coins, I mean, you can have a house full of gold, but you can't really carry with you a house full of gold all the time. So in my theory, that this came without any research. So I'm literally speaking as maybe for economists would be blaspheming what I'm saying, but I felt like maybe it's the invention of the banknote. So you start to accumulate more and more and more. And when you want more because it becomes addictive.
I would go as far as saying also the accumulation of credit. Credit and the fractional reserve banking, which is basically the challenge with when we started creating debt and credit is that we only give the credit to the people who can show that they can pay it back, which is a form of integrity at the top. Well, that's how it comes out, which is great. Right, credit is phenomenal. Even microloans in village in Africa is a massive difference to the functioning of the village. The difference there, though, is that because of fractional reserve banking and the fact that we keep printing more money and therefore money is devaluing, we call it inflation, but it's really deflation if you want to see it that way. Is that the only way you get ahead is that you have leverage, and leverage comes through loans, right? Most people can only afford their house because we're able to get a loan. So as long as if the rules for getting loans are going lower and lower and lower, then we have these bubbles, these housing crises, where people are essentially going out of their own means. But the thing that happens is if you have a ton of money, you can leverage it into all kinds of things. And so now you've built an empire, and that empire only gets bigger and bigger and bigger as long as you don't make, you know, poor decisions in terms of finance.
Yeah.
But if you're investing, 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 the rich continuously get richer, whereas the poor don't. And so they're stuck trading time for money, essentially. And that cannot, they can't get ahead of it. It's so difficult. And then you're, yeah, you're literally in the rat race at that point. And it's, you know, I feel rich in so many ways. Okay. I'm very fortunate, very privileged in 1,001 ways. Just the fact that I have this beautiful equipment and a place and a roof over my head, countless ways. But the truth is that I grew up with a family that definitely experienced poverty and definitely understood like that trauma, and that trauma passes down. Like it really does.
Yeah.
And I feel that scarcity like very viscerally in my experience, and moving through that surrender, doing things like the breath of one, I push you to an edge that feel like you're hyperventilating, feel like almost like a, like an anxiety attack in some ways, right? But in a way, in an environment and in a setting with a group that feels so helpful, you know, there and supportive, you can break through and realize that on the other side of that anxiety was only anxiety. It was only you. It was only your mental game that, yeah, made you feel poor. And I think a lot of people who have run into wealth and who do or are practicing hoarding, essentially, still feel poor. And it's because they have a poor mentality. They have a mindset that says that they have to hoard versus a mindset that says they can let it flow like energy normally does, right? Yeah. And just like stagnant water becomes kind of poisonous over time, and it creates, you know, things that aren't good for you, let's say. When water flows, it builds the entire, yeah, ecosystem, and it, yeah, makes it, it's a world builder.
That was my point about money. Yeah. I absolutely agree. Like, yeah, it's the movement. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that this, we have the chance to really break free from this generational lineage of fears and attachments, totally, and everything. And for me, the most powerful tool I found for that is actually Hoffman. Mm. Hoffman is literally based on that.
I can't believe I've never even heard of this.
Oh, it's game changer, really. I promise you, you're gonna come out from Hoffman, you're gonna give me the most beautiful quote, and you're gonna say, Gregorio, thank you so much for that.
Well,
it's next level.
That's beautiful. Speaking of unsolicited pitches or anything like that, anything, you know, we're coming to the end of this here. Anything you want to share with anyone, with the world, any message you have for everyone, anyone, before we wrap up here?
What can I say? Come, guys, come to meet me. I'm now with Andrea traveling around the world. So if you want to be a part of what we are creating, it's really this beautiful movement to really bring to life a big shift. And we are doing this with the Breath of Fun. We're doing it with coaching. We're doing it with a lot of different type of workshops. One that we are creating now, that we have created, that was phenomenal in San Francisco, is this sensorial experience, mm-hmm, where you come, we blindfold you, and we're going to start this amazing thing where we're going to start eating, smelling. You try to feed each other, and you don't know where people are. It's so much fun. People laugh, and it's so beautiful. Mm. And we have also different type workshop about conscious living and about how to be a kid again. So we have games for the whole day with, like, we are doing so many different things now also for corporate. So we are super excited because we are really starting to build the momentum. Mm. Singapore has opened the arms for, because Singapore really needs this a lot, and they are, mm-hmm, very, very ready for that. So we're really start doing that more and more in Singapore and Bali, but we are, really? Always moving around. So if you guys want to meet around, we are always on the move, and
and if you've got an event and you need somebody to come and lead a group activation or a group experience that is really going to make people move from, like, I'm in this on my own and I'm here to kind of connect and network, to I'm part of this family and this tribe, then shout out to Gregorio and his work on that. He's definitely phenomenal at that.
Thank you, my brother. Yeah. I'm very happy that you brought me many times to Superhero.
The magic. You're absolute magic, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Well, if you made it all this way, you know what to do. Like, comment, subscribe, ask questions, do all the things, hit the bell, because, well, we provide a value. And if you got all the way here, then aren't you going to want to see more? Aren't you going to want to participate? Isn't this something that maybe you want more of in your inbox or in your life? And if it is, feel free to share. Feel free to do any of those things. We'll see you in the next episode.
Bye-bye.